Welcome to the Upward Running Podcast, where faith fuels your fitness journey.
Welcome back to the Upward Running Podcast. This is your one stop each week to be motivated and inspired to get off the couch and onto the running trail where you can in turn inspire others to do the same. Let's learn, laugh, and leap into running together, giving God the glory for what we are able to do in His name. Amen. Well, I am your running host, Dean Thompson, coming to you once again from the Upward Sports Studio. You know, most people listening to this are probably runners and or walkers, and most of those people probably love to spend time in those activities. Today, we're going to talk about the desires that control what we do, and I think you'll like it. And then I'm going to share a new way to put your workouts into context. We always say every run should have a purpose. Well, we're going to share a way to do that. Maybe it'll be helpful for you. And joining me once again for those stories and much more is Upward Running Director Mitchell Hollis.
Thanks for having me, Dean. How has your week been?
Well, get this. You know what we did yesterday, Debbie and I?
What'd you do?
We rucked.
Did you really?
Yes.
You didn't come borrow my rucksack?
No, we bought some.
Did you really?
We bought two rucksacks and bought some weights. And
really?
Yep. So we started
how
yesterday.
How did you like it?
It was okay. We didn't do as much. We didn't have time to do more. We just we did 1 kilometer, actually, is what we did. So a little over half a mile.
Cool.
On the road. But we'll
you're going to get hooked on it.
Debbie, I think it felt more strenuous to her than it did to me.
Yeah.
But
how much did you have? How
25 pounds.
Okay.
And
Both of you had 20?
She had 15.
Okay.
So, yeah. Anyway, it looks like fun.
Well, 25 pounds to her is going to feel a lot different than, I mean, 15 pounds to her is going to feel a lot more than 25 pounds to you.
I guess so. I thought maybe that was kind of an equalizer.
I don't know.
But
that sounds.
We probably should have started, maybe should have started her at 10 instead, but I don't know. But
yeah.
But it's. I can see how it's going to affect. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
To doing more.
Well, good.
Of it. Yeah. Yeah. What about you?
Man, I'm just loving this time of year.
I know.
I love green grass. I love this time of year. My sinuses hate this time of year.
Yes.
But, you know, I'm a green thumb. I'm out in the yard. I'm trying to, I'm overanalyzing my grass right now. And I've gotten a little nerdy on grass the past few years.
Yeah. Yeah.
So. Yeah, I'm that guy. You know.
Well, I love this time of year. I love to watch everything turn green. It's really cool.
For sure.
Well, our post of the week comes from Shannon and Gay Coker. They said, we had a great week 11 workout 3 this morning with our Grove Level Upward Running group. They are so ready for their race next Saturday, April 26th. It is the Cornbread Festival 5K in South Pittsburgh, Tennessee. What fun. We have 15 on our team registered for the race. The race director has graciously agreed to give our team's top 3 winners a prize. The race features the Lodge Cast Iron Skillet headquarters and a factory which we run through in the race, and their prize will be something from there. Our bib gets us in the festival free. Yes, we can.
So, you know, Shannon and Gay, they were, in case you're out there listening and you don't know who Shannon and Gay are, which I find that highly improbable. But Shannon and Gay were in the very first Run for God class.
That's right.
Ever. I mean, they were in that first class when Upward Running wasn't a thing, Run for God wasn't a thing. It was just a running class at our church. And so when we kicked back off the church model with Upward, some people asked me, they like, are you going to teach a class at your church? And I'm like, well, Shannon and Gay's already beat me to it because this is my home church.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So I got to go visit. I went to week 10, the gospel presentation.
Yeah.
I went and spoke to their class, had the honor to do that. But I met a lady. I'm not going to say her name on here. I walked with a lady for a little while after or before the class. And Dean, this lady has lost 130 pounds.
Amazing.
It is incredible. Now, she didn't do all that with Upward Running. I think she's probably done the last 30 or 40 maybe with Upward Running. But talk about inspiring.
Yeah.
I mean, she's a truck driver or was a truck driver. She's retired from that now. And she just said she's kids and grandkids, and she just realized she was headed in the wrong direction and just put her foot down with the help of her doctor and said, now she did have a some kind of procedure. I don't remember which one it was, but irregardless, 130 pounds.
Yeah, that's amazing.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
She showed me pictures. She looks like a completely different person.
I bet.
And so this is a really cool class. So Shannon Gay, everybody in that class, congratulations. Sounds like that's going to be a cool race. I think you're talking about maybe trying to slip off up there. I don't know.
I may do it.
If you can get it in your calendar.
Yeah.
But yeah, I love getting the opportunity to visit these classes and just to hear the story. I mean, that's what this whole ministry is based on is stories from people and what God's done in their lives. So
yeah,
kudos to them.
And how cool. This is a very small race.
Yeah.
And I love the small races because you can do personal things like they're talking about doing with the race director. A lot of times race directors will work with you when you're bringing a group of people. And that's really cool. I mean, it's great to do the Disney Marathon or those big races, and there's a place for that and a lot of fun to do that.
Sure.
But there's also a lot of reasons to love these smaller venues too.
Yeah.
Interestingly, in this venue, this place where this lodge company that makes the cast iron skillets, I've been in that factory where they're running through.
Oh, yeah.
Before, back in my former life.
Now, I guess it's just a foundry. Now, I mean, it's a... fabricating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's where they make the stuff. So it's an interesting thing to look at. I went there specifically to look at packaging. That sounds exciting, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
But it was interesting. And I'll be looking forward to if I can make it out there, kind of going back to that place.
So a funny story, side note on cast iron skillets. You know, Holly and I, we went on a cruise. It's been several weeks back now. And do you remember the lady? It went viral. It was a lady that moved. She was a comedian, but she moved from California to Tennessee. And she just held her phone up and recorded this video that went viral. And she was talking about she made a mistake moving to Tennessee. And she offended a lot of people because she posted a video when she was talking about something she was cooking, and she mentioned that she was using a pan. Do you remember this?
No.
And she said, I offended like half the Eastern Seaboard because, and she held it up. She said, this is a skillet. This is a cast iron skillet. It is not a pan. But that lady was on this cruise. She did a couple of the comedy nights or whatever.
That's good stuff.
But yeah, if you don't know anything about cast iron skillets, man, that's the best thing to cook in.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Yeah, and there's a different protocol in how you wash them and everything else too.
You know, there used to be, but not anymore. And I just learned this just somewhat recently, maybe in the past year, but you can't, conventional wisdom says you can't wash a cast iron skillet using dish soap. Because the dish detergent will break down the cast iron, cause it to rust and break down and things like that. But I learned just recently, I mean, I probably have 15 cast iron skillets. I mean, I love cooking in cast iron. I've got some that are over 100 years old from my great grandparents. But the new detergents nowadays don't have lye in them. Okay. And lye was the chemical that broke down cast iron. And so you can use dish detergent nowadays. Now, I've said that to a few people, and it's like, I don't believe that. I'm not using dish. And I get that, too. I don't know if I've actually washed one in dish soap now. Just because you grew up that pounded in your head.
Yeah.
I don't know how we got off on cast iron skillets, but...
Well, good luck to Shannon and Gay and their group in South Pittsburgh, Tennessee at the Lodge.
Yeah.
Cast iron pan maker, cast iron skillet maker, not pan maker. Our run of the week comes from Travis Vaughn. Of course, he's an Upward guy. And there's a reason why I brought this one up. He just says, it's just a morning run, a 6-mile run in the morning. He says, got to start getting back in the morning routine. Hmm. And Travis has gone through some injuries. To take some time, he had to take some time off. Then he was involved in that relay race that I was in, and he ran hard on no training.
Yeah,
and he did a great job. But his regular routine in the past has been to get up in the morning early and do these workouts. And trying to get back to that is sometimes hard mm-hmm. to do. But you got to do what Travis is doing. You just got to get up and just start doing it.
Well, and what I admire about this post, because, I mean, Travis is a fast guy, but he's adhering to what we always say is that most people don't run their fast runs fast enough, their slow runs slow enough. Yep. I mean, for a runner of Travis's caliber, this mile was a 6 mile run at a 10:01 pace. That's insanely slow.
Yep.
But that is what Travis's body needs right now. And so kudos to him to have the discipline to run that slow, knowing that his body needs it.
Very important.
I was surprised to see that because I know Travis likes to run fast.
Yeah. But, yeah. It's a good observation, though. He does. He takes it really easy.
Sure.
Often. And that's a good thing because you got to let
the body. It's why he's as fast as he is.
That's right. That's right. And Travis, he's a pretty driven guy. I'm sure he'll get back to normal before long. The trivia question from last week, what is the most popular running injury? Well, statistics tell us that running injuries affect 37 to 56% of runners. And of course, most of those, well, they're lower leg injuries because that's your foundation and it makes sense that that's where they would be. They're typically soft tissue like muscle, tendon, ligaments, something like that, with a fair amount affecting bones, but most of it in that soft tissue. But the one that is most prevalent is runner's knee. There's a reason why they named an injury after runners. Patellofemoral pain syndrome. It's usually felt around the kneecap or behind the kneecap, and it usually has something to do with the way your kneecap tracks when you run. It's often caused by doing too much too fast, as we'll find.
It's an overuse injury.
Yeah, very, very often. Now, jumper's knee is another injury that's very similar to runner's knee. It feels almost identical, but it is a little bit different. But that too is another injury that a lot of runners get that causes some knee pain. So if you put those two things together, it is clearly the most prevalent injury for the runner. Again, here's the thing you need to do. Here's what you need to know about when you start to get that kind of knee pain is start to stretch those quads. Mm-hmm. Keep those quads loose, and this problem will be not as bad. So keep those quads loose for sure. Hmm. If you want to know what's next, medial tibia stress syndrome, which is shin splints, as that's what we know it as. Again, another one caused by doing too much too soon. It's often combined with, you know, like a form issue or a problem with really tight calves can cause a problem. So in this case, keep your calves loose. Mm-hmm. You noticing a trend here? And then just to round out that top three list, the list that I found didn't have this third, but I feel like it's third. They listed Achilles tendonitis as third. I think number three is plantar fasciitis. Mm-hmm. I just see a lot of plantar fasciitis, and not necessarily just in runners.
Yeah.
And that's pain with, you got that tendon that runs under the bottom of your, it's like your arch, basically, that tendon that forms your arch. And usually the pain is in your heel. It can be in your forefoot, but 95, 98% of the time, it's in your heel. And it really hurts in the morning. Mm-hmm. If the first thing you do when you get up out of bed is put your foot down and it feels like somebody's stabbing you in the bottom of your foot, that is plantar fasciitis.
Yeah.
Again, what's the best way to avoid getting plantar fasciitis? Mm-hmm. Keep those feet loose. Keep them stretched. And if you'll do that, you can avoid plantar fasciitis.
And do everything gradually. You know,
absolutely.
But the funny thing about this trivia question is, you know, we talk about running injuries. We go over the big five and the 5K challenge. But the one that's always been the most difficult for me to talk about is runner's knee, because that's the one injury that I've never had. At least crazy? I don't think I have.
You'd know it if you had.
But, well, I say that more confidently now than ever because I've got tennis elbow. Yep. I don't play tennis, but I have tennis elbow, and I've traced it back to some mulch that I spread that turned into a competition with my two boys. But anyway, too much, too soon, too fast. But now I can relate to it because tennis elbow is basically runner's knee in the elbow. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
And so I can kind of relate to it now, but not because I have it in my knee. It's because I have it in my elbow, which is so strange.
That's funny. Well, nobody likes to stretch. Everybody likes to get through with their run and go on to the next thing. But taking 5 minutes after every run to keep everything loose can make a big difference.
Upward Sports equips churches to run self-sustaining sports ministries in their communities. Whether you're a sports fanatic or on staff at a church, Upward Sports will give you all the tools you need to run a first-class sports ministry that allows you to reach families in your community. Upward Sports offers basketball, soccer, flag football, cheerleading, volleyball, baseball, and softball through league and camp offerings. At Upward Sports, we want to help your church make a difference and give you increased opportunities to share the gospel. Learn more today at upward.org. That's upward.org.
Okay, Dean. So, you know, every once in a while I learn something and it's like, how did you not know that? Do you ever have those moments?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
That you just feel like a complete moron, that you didn't know that. Well, I had this happen yesterday morning. You know, I just kind of, my morning thing is I just kind of walk through the Bible. I may be in Genesis and then I may jump to, I take it a chapter at a time, but I like to jump all over, you know.
Yeah.
Mix it up. Well, I started back in Matthew yesterday, starting back to the Gospels. And so I was reading, of course, I always read the commentary on the chapter. You know, you've got the whole, the explanation of the when and the where and all that kind of stuff, the author. And so I love to read through that. And so I read chapter one, Matthew. And you know how we always say that you can read something 500 times in the Bible and something different jumps out to you every time. And I learned something yesterday that probably everybody listening to this knows, but I just never put two and two together. Do you have any idea what that is?
No.
Because you know, Matthew 1 is the chronology of Jesus.
Yeah.
You know, the family lineage.
Yeah.
I guess that's what that's called. I did not know that Solomon was Bathsheba's son.
Really?
I didn't. I mean, it's like...
You're right.
Because, you know, the first son of Bathsheba died, but after King David repented, they gave her another son. I did not know that that was Solomon.
That was Solomon, yeah. Yeah, that's interesting.
And you're sitting there like, yeah, everybody knows that. I did not know that. And I felt so dumb after because I went and I told Holly and she was like, yeah, I did not know that.
That's funny.
So, read Matthew 1, I don't know how many times in my life and read all the Old Testament chapters about the life of David and Solomon, never put two and two together.
Wow. Well, that's interesting.
So if you're out there and you didn't know that, please send a message and just make me feel a little bit better that I should have known that.
Oh, there's always something like that. It always amazes me when, you know, there's something, there's always that thing and somebody says, you didn't know that? And I'm like,
No.
No.
Everybody knew that, really?
I tell you what, though, it takes a man to admit that you didn't know something.
It was like a light bulb moment. Yeah. I mean, I'm like, I don't know.
That's good stuff.
That may not be as interesting to everybody as it was to me.
Well, this comes from a website called Dumb Runner. And it's entitled, Running a Marathon Turns Your Brain Awesome, Researchers Find. It says, running a marathon can cause a spike in awesomeness, new research shows, creating awesome changes in the brain that can last weeks, months, or even years. The study, which could have far-reaching implications in the field of applied awesomeness, appears in next month's issue of the New England Journal of Woe. These findings are really exciting, said Paul D. Hudson, PhD, the lead researcher and an avid runner himself. For years, we've known that running, even a short distance, boosts the brain in various ways, and we've hypothesized that finishing a marathon can deliver exponentially greater benefits. This study is the first to validate that hypothesis and, indeed, to quantify it. To reach their conclusions, Dr. Hudson and his colleagues followed 465 first-time marathoners using MRI scans and blood tests to record their brain's awesomeness levels in the months leading up to their race, immediately after their race, and in the months afterward. What they found, Hudson said, astounded them. During marathon training, awesomeness increased, but in pretty small increments, he said. After the race, however, whoa. These runners' brains were, on average, 3.8 times awesomer. Those levels diminished over time, Hudson said, but these losses, too, were gradual and incremental, and the brain's awesomeness levels remained above baseline even 4 months later. The takeaway is clear, he said. If you want an awesomer brain, run a marathon.
So is this like the Babylon Bee for runners?
It is. It is. It's just a satire site. And this guy, Mark Remy is his name, runs this site. And it's a fun little thing to do. It's supported by people who just go on there and donate to him. So it wouldn't hurt for you to go on there. And if you enjoy what you read, you know, help the guy out, because it's a pretty neat thing. He's been doing it for several years.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting.
This is funny. But it's so true.
It is so true.
Anytime you do something hard, you're awesomer for it.
That's right. And now we have the scientific proof to back it up. That's right.
What did he call it? The awesomer levels?
That's right.
The awesome levels?
Yeah. If you want an awesomer brain, run a marathon.
Yeah, for sure.
It's right there. That's dumbrunner.com if you're looking for it. Well, if you're a runner, you love to run. If you're a walker, you love to walk. If you're a rucker, you love to ruck. But what should our most basic desire be? Rhonda Williams addresses that in this story. It's called Resting at His Feet. When I was a small child, I would slip out of my bed in the middle of the night, creep down the hall, and quietly crawl in bed with my parents. I slept at their feet, so I wouldn't wake them, because I knew if they found me, they would carry me back to my own bed. I loved my parents with all my heart. They were the most important people in the world to me, and so I wanted to be with them all the time. I broke into a big smile when seeing Mom after school and was excited when Daddy came home from work. I didn't understand why I had to stay home with a babysitter when they went out to dinner. Didn't they enjoy being with me as much as I loved being with them? I knew my parents loved me more than anyone else. They took care of me, protected me, and played with me. Why wouldn't I want to be with them? My Heavenly Father loves me even more than my earthly parents. He provides for my every need, protects and teaches me, and brings joy and happiness into my life. I should yearn to be with Him just as I wanted to be with my parents. I should lie at His feet and bask in the warmth of His gentle love and care, just as I snuggled into my parents' bed. But I'm an adult now with responsibilities and obligations, and sometimes I just don't have time. Really? Am I really too busy to spend time with God without asking for anything? Oh, I have plenty of time to spend in prayer when everything goes wrong and I need His help. But what about when things are good? I didn't have a particular need when I quietly crawled onto the foot of my parents' bed. I just wanted to feel their presence. Just knowing they were near gave me the warm fuzzies, and I could drift off to a peaceful sleep. Our Heavenly Father wants us to desire to be with Him, just to spend time with Him, just as every father does. There's no better way to spend time than in basking in the presence of the One who loves us most. Time with our Lord and Savior will give us more than just the warm fuzzies. He will provide the strength, confidence, and inner peace we need to face the world.
Man, Rhonda does such a good job at just painting pictures. I mean,
yeah.
We could just see everything she was talking about so vividly.
Yeah.
She's really good at this.
Yeah. I can't help but look at this from the other direction, too. Think about, as a parent, I think about how much I loved spending time and still love spending time with my kids.
Sure.
God has that yearning desire to spend the time with you.
Yeah.
Just as we should have that time with him. And I think he just gets a smile on his face when we do spend time with him. But, you know, how much does this story kind of step on our toes?
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, we're going to dive off into the details, but at the end of the day, we're too busy.
Yeah.
We are too busy. All of us as a society, we've talked about this over and over, and we're going to talk about it again. We just cram our schedules. And so, I mean, just like Rhonda said, you know, I'm an adult now with the responsibilities, obligations, and sometimes I just don't have time. That is a cop out.
And that's our excuse.
It is.
Often. Yeah.
It's a lousy excuse too.
And it is. Now, to be clear, we can spend time with God while we're doing, I mean, spending time with God while we run, while we walk.
Sure.
We can do that, and we should do that. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that a lot of people listening here, and including you and I, we do that.
Mm-hmm.
But we do have to spend time being still with him one-on-one as well.
Well, you know, my wife is so loving in this way that through the years, she has informed me, lovingly, that sitting beside her watching TV is not spending time with her.
Yeah.
Being on the phone while she's in the room is not spending time with her.
Right.
Driving in the car, this is the best one. Driving in the car listening to a podcast is not spending time with her. And so we do... We do this. We try to say, and your point is correct.
Yeah.
Your point is correct. We can praise God and we can have those moments of praise on a run with God. But think about the most impactful times on that run when God consumes you. What do? You stop.
Yep.
I have been on runs before where I get so overwhelmed by something God's trying to show me, and my posture in that moment is to stop.
Yeah.
And we have to stop more. Stop working. And I really struggle with this every time I talk about this because I don't want this to come across as our society has perverted this concept so bad that we associate doing nothing with laziness. And that is not true.
Yeah.
We have to stop occasionally because if we don't, we'll be divorced.
Yeah.
If we don't, our relationship with God will be strained. We have to stop and give the attention where the attention is due. It's what makes a healthy marriage, and it's what makes our relationship with God that much stronger. Then doing the run and praising God, that only enhances it. But right. That can't be your only interaction with God, is those moments where we're trying to fit him in places.
Yeah, you're right. Going back to what you were saying about your wife, I look at my wife. I remember the days when we first got married and how we looked at each. We loved each other, and mm-hmm. It's different now.
Mm-hmm.
There's just this. I mean, I come around the corner and I see her and my heart rate goes up mm-hmm. still to this day.
Sure.
Because I just love spending time with her, and we try to create moments to be mm-hmm. able to do that. Well, why is that relationship so much deeper now than it was 20 years ago? Mm-hmm. Well, the reason why is because I hate to use the term worked on. I don't know.
I think that's exactly what it is.
Well, yes and no.
Yeah.
I think you do. You have to be intentional about things for sure.
It's not a natural thing.
But
you have to go against the grain to make your marriage successful.
Yeah.
Because everything in our society says, don't do that.
Well, that's true. That's true.
Don't do that.
That is for sure. But we got there by intentionally getting together and spending time together.
Mm-hmm.
And now we are where we are. Well, if I have the same feeling for God mm-hmm. that I want to be with him and I want to develop that relationship, I'm going to have the same relationship with him where I would rather hang out. I'd rather hang out with my wife on Saturday morning than go run a race these days.
Sure.
It used to be the other way. You know, it used to be that I loved running races in the mornings on Saturday mornings. Mm-hmm. Now I still love running races on Saturday mornings, but sometimes I'd rather hang out with her than run a race. Well, if we're working on a relationship with God, then that's the way we're going to be. We're going to look for excuses to kind of pull off to the side and spend time with him. We'll find time then if we're working on that relationship.
Sure.
Psalm 27:4 says, "One thing I ask from the Lord, this only do I seek, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to gaze on the beauty of the Lord and to seek him in his temple." Note, David wanted to be in God's presence every day, not just when he was in trouble. He was already where he needed to be when trouble came.
You know, I feel like there's a good, I shouldn't say good. This is the way I see it. There should be a, when you go somewhere to a race or wherever you're traveling and Debbie's not with you, you can sleep, you can be sleeping on the most comfortable bed in the world, but you don't sleep as good.
It's true.
Because there's a hole there. I mean, Holly even says it when I'm traveling and she's sleeping in her own bed.
Yep.
She can't hardly sleep. There's a void there. And that is, to me, that is a test of my closeness with God. Because we are going to, there's going to be days, it's not right, but there are going to be days where we don't get our study in. Do you feel that void?
That's a good
That's
question.
A good indication, because it should feel the same as you're traveling and your spouse. Now, some people, you may not have a spouse and you're not relating in that way, but think about that thing that you miss when it's not there.
Yeah.
That's how we should be with God. And if that hole is there, if you don't get that study in tomorrow morning and you get it to the end of the day and you're like, man, my day just didn't feel right, that is a good thing.
Yeah.
That is confirmation that you recognize the need for that in your life. Problem is, some people don't even recognize it because they never even started it.
Yeah.
And you can be a child of God and be far away from him not feel him. So I don't know, for me that's always, it's kind of like conviction. Is, you've heard me say conviction is comforting.
Yeah.
You know, feeling that void of not having God right by me when life gets busy, that is comforting.
Yeah.
Because that gives me confirmation that he's there.
Yeah.
And I just need to go right back where I was.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. You know, the other confirmation from this verse and others like it that David wrote in the Psalms is that we know who David was.
Mm-hmm.
David was a flawed man.
Sure.
Just like all of us are. Yeah. Made some terrible decisions and some terrible choices and did some awful things.
Mm-hmm.
But in the depths of his heart, he wanted to be with God. And it's so hopeful for us when we find ourselves all the time doing things, saying things, thinking things that we shouldn't and we know is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I like the idea that I can look back at David's life and think, well, God said David was a man after his own heart. I can be that kind of a man if I will just apply. If I won't feel guilty, that's not a good word. If I won't dwell on the mistakes that I make and realize that spending time with God can heal those things, then I'll be way better off. And I've got this example of David to look at and go, that's who I can be like. I can be like that too.
Yeah. I mean, look at David's life. I mean, God, you hear the cliche, he can bring beauty out of ashes. I mean, think about David's life and what happened. I mean, he had an affair. He had an affair with Bathsheba. He had Bathsheba's husband killed. They had a child as a result of that ultimately God took. But David didn't dwell there. I mean, I haven't read this part of scripture in a while, but basically David, when that child died, David basically got up and went to work the next morning and said, God, I made that mistake. I paid for that mistake. And then along came Solomon, which I'm just now learning. and look what happened from that. So it's not to say that we should rejoice in our tragedies, but we should acknowledge that God's going to use all of it
yep,
to the good for those who love him, which is the whole story of David. So I don't know. It's just it's a beautiful thing that God shows us in the story of David.
Psalm 16:9 says, "Therefore my heart is glad and my tongue rejoices. My body also will rest secure." Note, you can experience joy no matter your circumstances. The secret to real joy is to stay in God's presence. Guess we jumped the gun a little bit there, but what would happen in our lives if we really did choose joy in moments where it doesn't make sense, where the world tells us we shouldn't? How different would this world be if we all did that? I was talking last week about this idea that we see these reality shows and all they dwell on are these negative stories. Mm-hmm. What if all of those stories were attached to it was, but God pulled me out of this? What if that were the case? It would just change the world.
Yeah, I've talked about it on here before. I think sometimes as Christians, it's like Eeyore is our spirit animal. You know, yeah. We walk around just looking for the bad and sad in every situation, and there's so much. I mean, you skipped right over it. I was hoping we were going to talk about it a little bit, but I'm going to go back to it now. You know, I don't know if anybody watched American Idol last week. Blew my mind that the entire, was it 3 hours? It was a three-hour episode.
Hour show. Yep.
It was the Easter special, and it was songs about faith.
Yep.
Dean, I mean, they were praising Jesus.
Yep.
On live TV on American Idol. And I remember I looked at Holly because we watch American Idol. I love American Idol. And I said, this would have never happened 2 years ago.
It's true.
And what's so sad is that there's some Christians lobbing bombs at them right now. Like, well, that's not, they weren't being genuine and all that. That's not for me to judge. Mm-mm. I'm joyous that it happened because, man, just think if that sparks something else, and then another show does that, another show does that, another show does that.
Yeah.
God's going to use that. I don't really care what was in the producers' hearts, because I heard the name of Jesus more times in that one episode than I think I've heard on any network in the past 5 years.
That's a good point.
And that is a good thing. And absolutely, we need to focus on, just to your point, we need to have joy that happened and stop lobbing bombs, trying to judge the heart of those. I don't care why they did it. Point is they did it.
Yeah. And a good example of lobbing those bombs is the guy that probably was partially instrumental in pulling all that off was Jelly Roll. There's a lot of people who have really ugly things to say about Jelly Roll.
Yeah.
Whether or not he's a real Christian or whatever. And I get it. I get their point of view. I understand their point of view. At the same time, God uses people in different ways. And who's to say that God hasn't just really taken over his life and is got him in a spot where he is touching people that the rest of us can't get to?
Yeah.
I mean, we have to
we've
quit judging
stop
people.
That. We've got to stop that.
That's right.
That's our faith.
Yes.
We've got to call that out. And it is not up to me to try to prescribe motive. That's not my job. We do that though. Now, are there times to hold each other accountable as Christians? Absolutely. Doing it on social media is not, no, stop
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
If that's you, stop it, really.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a beautiful thing that happened on live TV on a major network for 3 hours.
Yeah.
Be joyful about that.
Amen. Amen. And looking at this where she says you can experience joy no matter your circumstances, I think about a lot of times Debbie and I, if we're sitting in traffic, we joke with each other that if we're in traffic, we look at each other and go, well, at least we get to spend more time together. And that's our positive spin on, but it's true, right?
Yeah,
it's a positive way to look at sitting in traffic.
It is. I should
look
at it more that way.
Well, what if when we were in traffic alone, we thought, well, It just means I get to spend more time with God.
Yeah.
Because I'm not really doing anything else right now. I mean,
God's finding time for you to do nothing.
That's right. That's right. That's right. Martha, Martha, the Lord answered, you are worried and upset about many things, but few things are needed, or indeed only one. Mary has chosen what is better, and it will not be taken from her. That's Luke 10:41, of course. Note, doing things for Jesus is important, but not more important than spending time with him.
So, I've been called an old soul since I was a teenager. I love sitting and talking with old men on their front porch in a rocking chair with a big old glass of sweet tea. I've just always been, even when we used to camp, I mean, Holly would make fun of me because I would go find the old men in the campground.
I can picture that.
I just do like that. But the point is, spending time with Jesus is even more effective. Now, let me say this about what I'm about to say. This is as much for me as it is anyone. And I've already stepped on my own toes with that last comment because there's an old man right down the road that the Lord is telling me right now that I need to go have a glass of sweet tea with. Mm. I see him out in his front yard all the time, and it's there again. Every time I go by, I'm like, oh, I just don't got time. I think I've even talked about this guy on this podcast before, and I still haven't stopped.
Oh, wow.
I'm going to do that. Next time I see him out, I'm stopping. I don't care if I've got a meeting with the president. I'm going to stop because he needs friends in his life. If you can tell me exactly what time you ran today or walked today or rucked today, and you can tell me all the details about it, but you can't tell me about your last time with Jesus, it might be time to take inventory. Because, I mean, that is so convicting to me.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I'm doing a lot of rucking right now. And I already know exactly what time I'm doing it today.
Mm-hmm.
And thank God I had my quiet time is in the mornings. But I think there are times when that will get pushed to the side before that afternoon ruck will get pushed aside. And we have to be very vigilant about that because we know that time, whether it's in the morning or the afternoon or whenever you do it, yields so much more than anything else we can do, but we don't slow down long enough to just acknowledge that and to put those guardrails in our life that protect that time. Because honestly, I mean, there's days I come in here, I sit right here at this desk and my Bible is sitting right here and I had every intention of opening that Bible and an email pops up or a text pops up.
And you head down another track.
And I head down that road. But if I were about to go out on a ruck, that email's going to wait.
Yeah.
Or that phone call's going to wait. And we need to be just as protective of our time with the Lord as we are, because it yields so much more than any ruck or run or walk or whatever it is you're doing. We've got to do that.
Wow. You got anything planned after this podcast? Because I think you're going to have to take me to the hospital because my toes are broken now.
Hey, I'm telling you,
I run every day.
And it seems like it's always Rhonda's stories that just get in my kitchen. Yeah. So thanks, Rhonda.
Yeah. Really. I think this story kind of put this verse in a little bit different light for me. I've always thought about this from the context of choosing which is more important, the work or Jesus, which one is more important. But it's more than that. Mm. It's if Martha truly desired to spend time with Jesus above all else, it should have dawned on her at that time. I'm not saying she didn't want to spend time with him, and I'm not saying she's just wrong in what she's thinking in her mind, but that wasn't the question. The question was not, is Jesus more important than work? The question was, is Jesus the most important thing?
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a difference between those things. And again, it's something we don't do what we should. Jesus should be the most important thing, period. Mm-hmm. And we say it, mm-hmm. we'll say it, but does our life show it? Again, to your point, I've run every day except one for the last 13 and a half years. I have found time to run every day. Mm-hmm. You know what I haven't done mm-hmm. is I haven't read the Bible every day for the last 13 plus years. I'm sure there are days I haven't prayed in the last 13 plus years. Mm-hmm. What's my priority? Mm-hmm. Question. Formal prayer time is important, but do you also talk to God as a friend? I like to talk to him when I'm running and also when I'm driving. Sometimes we chat when I'm cooking or doing the dishes. I think I spend far more time with God in this kind of way than I do formally. I think any time that we do it while we're running or walking or whatever it is that we're doing, I think that falls into this category that she's talking about. And you know, I've often thought about the way the Levite scribes were so reverent about the way they treated writing God's name. They took a bath before they wrote God's name. They used a pen and then they threw that pen away because you couldn't use it for anything else after that. They had such reverence and awe for God. And there's a place for that. Mm-hmm. But there's also a place for talking to God while you're in the shower, mm-hmm. you know? And we can't lose sight of either of those things. And sometimes we tend to focus in one direction or the other.
It's both and.
Yes.
I mean, it's just go back to, I mean, this is why marriage is a picture of our relationship with God. Mm. Just think about if, let's say all you ever did was, if all I ever did was, man, this is really starting to step on my toes. Thanks again, Rhonda. If the only time that Holly and I spent together was with the TV on or driving down the road with a podcast on or out with friends, or if that was our only time together, and you look at those and you say, those are good things. There's nothing wrong with that. And there's not. Mm-hmm. There is not. But if we don't have those times, those intimate times where it's just her and I sitting across the table with each other, or our thing is Saturday morning coffee, mm-hmm. That's one of those times that we wake up, we fix a pot of coffee, we go out on the front porch or the back porch if the weather's right, and we just talk.
And it does more for your relationship than anything else you can do.
Way more, yeah. Way more. And I think I'm like you. I guess this is where wisdom comes in, is I'm starting to see that more and more nowadays, that is where you have to be intentional.
Yeah.
All the other stuff, that just kind of, it comes natural, and that enhances your relationship, but that is not where the real, again, I'm like you, I don't like to use the word work, but that is where the foundation is built in those times.
That's right.
Not in the TV time or the out with friends or listening to podcasts. Yep. Those are enhancements. Those are putting the two befores up. But the bedrock, the foundation, the brick and mortar is those intimate times. And I'm using intimate in it's just you and her and nothing else. That's where the foundation is built. And in the same way, it's those times with God where it's me sitting in here with that book, closing this computer down and focusing on that. That's where the bedrock of my faith is formed.
Yeah.
All the other things, praising Jesus on a ruck or looking at a sunset, or all those are great things. But if that's all you're basing your relationship on, it's going to crumble.
Yeah, it's superficial then. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, I don't know why this hit me all of a sudden. I feel compelled to say it, even though I don't know that it really is part of what we're discussing here. Back probably, I don't know, it was 6 or 8 months ago. I don't even remember where we were. We were in a situation, Debbie and I were with other people, and she said something, and I corrected her on what she said. And she said something about, you know, you never do that. And sure enough, when I did it,
you felt it.
Man, it was like I stabbed myself in the heart. Yeah. It was like as soon as it came out of my mouth, I was like, what did you just say? I felt so bad about it. And that's where that conviction, because I care so much about that relationship, mm-hmm. that conviction was swift instant. And hard, and it really hit me. The question is, do I have that same conviction when I do something I shouldn't do that's against what God would have me to do? I hope it is. Again, back to your point about conviction and why conviction is a positive thing. Mm-hmm. It is a positive thing.
It's a comforting thing.
It is.
Even though it hurts like the Dickens.
That's right. Yeah. Another question. How do you bask in his presence?
I'm going to wait for your answer.
Well, during our Easter Sunday sunrise service we had, the pastor, he stopped. Actually, we had to wait for a train to pass first, but after the train went by, he said, okay, I just want us to be quiet. And he just stood there for, I don't know, 30, 45 seconds, and we just listened to nature. All the birds chirping, a little bit of a breeze going, and it was awesome. We don't ever do that. Now, you talk about hunting, and
So I'm going to cut you off right here.
Yeah.
We've talked about this many, many, many times. And it's turkey season right now. I'm not really a turkey hunter. And I'm going to say tomorrow morning, but we got to check the weather. Before we cut the next podcast, you and I are going turkey hunting. Because what you described for 30 seconds, think about 2 hours.
Yeah.
It's just incredible. And yeah. That was my answer to this question is nature.
Nature. Yeah.
Sitting in a stand. I don't even care if we take a gun or not. It's watching the woods come alive, and there's nothing. And if you're not a hunter out there, I urge you, just go find some woods somewhere that's kind of overlooking a field, preferably. You know, I'm getting a little picky here. Get out there 30 minutes before the sun comes up, and then sit there until an hour after the sun comes up. Whoa! Yeah. I mean, if you want to see God, if you could take every atheist in the world hunting one morning, yeah. Probably have a lot fewer atheists. but will you make that commitment? Before we cut this next podcast, we're going to go. I don't care if we take a gun or not. I want to go down there in the back, down the river, and just sit there.
All right.
Okay.
I'll do it.
And then we'll go for a ruck after or something.
All right. All right. Well, there are a lot of other ways we can do it too. I mean, sitting at your desk, you can be in his presence as well. And I'm sure that you've had those times where you felt that as well.
Sure. In the car, driving down the road. Yeah.
I mean, it can be anywhere, anytime. But again, it's sort of like reading your Bible. You have to force yourself to do it in times when maybe you just don't feel like it in order for you to come up on that day where it feels magical.
Yeah.
Just like running. There's days where I don't feel like going and running, but I got to get out there and run anyway, and I do it. And then someday I just feel magical, and I feel great, and it's a fantastic run, or I see something, or something happens.
But many times those magical days are in the days that you didn't even want to walk out the door.
A lot of times. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. So, that's the way we do it. Last question. Rick Warren said, "We are human beings, not human doings. Do you find it easier to do things for Jesus rather than to just sit at his feet?" It does feel easier to do things, I think. Although physically it's easier to be than it is to do. That's the interesting thing about this is we tend to gravitate toward the thing that's easier. Mm-hmm. And truthfully, the easier thing physically is to just be rather than do. Yet we still feel like we have to be doing all the time.
It's what Paul said. I struggle. I do the things that I don't want to do, and I don't do the things that I do want to do. That's sin. That's our sinful nature, and it's so counter to the things of God. And that's why it is work sometimes. It is, we have to intentionally sit and just be.
Yes.
When everything in us is saying, hey, go do something.
Yep.
That should come as a result. You know, that is good, just like doing things with our wife is good, but just sitting and being with her is better.
Yep. Yep. Well, and I want to point out the opposite side of this question as well, though.
Okay.
Because I remember a lady when I worked down in South Georgia. There was a lady who every other thing that came out of her mouth was something about God and Jesus. And it was great to hear. However, She was a terrible worker. She rarely got her job done because she was too busy talking about God and Jesus all the time. That's not okay. Because I remember thinking about how much damage she was doing to Christianity in general by, you know, people being able to look at her and go, well, yeah, she look at her. She's lazy. She doesn't do her job. I mean, we have to do the most basic things. I used to talk about how the old saying, safety first, you know, we used to say safety, quality, and then production. And that's the way we used to put it. And I turned that on its head and I said, it's not safety, quality, and production. It's safety first, quality second. Production is a given. Because guess what? I can stop there being any car wrecks. All you have to do is just not let people get on the road and drive. And we'll have no car wrecks. I mean, nobody will die in a car accident if we just didn't have cars on the road. Problem solved.
Yeah.
No, it doesn't solve anything. And it doesn't solve anything if we aren't good representations of God in doing the things that we do, then being isn't gonna help a whole lot.
Yeah. Everything you do it for the glory of God. She was a great beer. She must have missed that passage though. Because it is important. Yeah. That goes to our character at that point. If we're not giving what we're doing 100% and pointing to God in the process, then we're hurting our witness at that point.
And I guess the bottom line is that when you spend time at his feet the way that she has described it here, you need to bring some fruit with you to spend time with him. And if you're not bringing some fruit, then
it's both and. Yeah.
It can be terribly hard to stay on track as a runner or a walker. The world also makes it difficult to stay on track spiritually, too. For pennies a day, Upward Running can make both of these journeys more fun and much easier. Join Upward Running today and get access to training plans, videos, and the best group of active Christians you will find anywhere. Go to upwardrunning.com and sign up today.
All right, we're back. And you know, everybody likes to talk about shoes.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, runners do. Runners like to talk about running shoes. You're not that big on it.
I've never been a shoe junkie.
A lot of people are. Otherwise, there wouldn't be all these articles on shoes.
Well, it's because I've wore the same pair of shoes for like 15 years now.
You're practical.
Yeah. I kind of practice what we preach, you know.
That's
good. Experiment too much.
That's good. Well, there's some serious buzz about one particular shoe. And I mean, it just came out this past weekend. The shoe has a terrible name, though. It's by Puma, and it's called the Fast R Puma Elite 3. I wish these people would do a better job at naming shoes. You know, Adidas came out with that shoe a few years ago that had a weird name to it. I can't remember it because it's too long.
Yeah.
Anyway, the Fast R Puma Elite 3, it's a racing shoe. Puma claims it's 3.4% more efficient than any other shoe on the market. And they had people racing in several events around, you know, Boston Marathon. They don't just have the Boston Marathon. They also have a 5K and a mile run and some other events. And these shoes did quite well in all of those races, including the Boston Marathon. And we're going to talk more specifically about the Boston Marathon at the end. But it seems clearly better than any other shoe. I mean, just based on the anecdotal evidence of one weekend, it is crazy how good it appears these shoes are.
So, and maybe you read into this more than what you're showing on this outline, but how do they come up with 3.4%? What is the science? Because obviously, unless they just pulled that number out of thin air, which wouldn't surprise me either, how do they come up with such an exact, what is the matrix? What does that test look like that says 3.4%?
The ones that I've seen is the same person wearing the two different shoes 2 weeks apart,
so try to replicate
doing a particular workout or race. Yeah, that's what I've seen.
So the percentage if it's the mile, it was 3.4% faster on the mile than the other shoe.
Right.
Okay. Right. That makes sense. Yeah.
Now, to be fair, it does look like Nike is about to come out with a new shoe, because I don't know if you've read about the Breaking 4 initiative. I think we talked about it on the podcast one time.
The ladies.
Faith Kipyegon trying to break 4 minutes, and they're talking about maybe new shoes. But if they're going to do it, they got to do it quick, because that's going to happen in June. I think June the 26th is when that particular race happens. So they better get on it pretty quick if they're going to come out with a new shoe. And maybe she's already working and training in a new shoe. I don't know. But Puma is the one who does these studies. So, you know, they're going to, maybe it was an independent study. I don't know. But they're the ones who came out with the study that said they were better. So you don't know. But the evidence so far, Patrick Deaver, who was second in the 5K, he ran 13:35, said, "I definitely felt like they were giving me a lot of help down that last straight," Deaver said, noting the foam felt softer and more responsive. "I almost felt like my legs were going to give way, but that bounce was keeping my momentum going forward."
That's a good way to describe it.
Yeah. And then Amon Kemboy, who finished just 2 seconds behind him, said, "You kind of feel the bounce only," Kemboy said. "So even though you're tired, you feel just the drive it gives you when your legs are tired."
Which is almost the same thing Patrick said.
Yeah, very similar. So they even used them in the mile. Now, for those of you who don't understand racing shoes and all of that goes into that with elite athletes, nobody, zero people wear the same shoe to race a mile and a marathon. That doesn't happen. I've never, literally never heard of that. And here they are, people wearing the same shoe, running a mile and a marathon. Very interesting to me. So we're going to have more evidence going forward. It looks promising right now, but we'll see what happens going forward. But what's so exciting to me is, at first it was only these big guys, the Nike, and it came out with Adidas first, came out with the first super shoe foam, and then Nike came out with theirs. And for a while it was just those two, but now you got obviously Puma here, On Athletics, Asics, Under Armour even, and of course Saucony, because I'm a Saucony guy. But there's a lot of players kind of advancing this technology, where in the past it's only been a couple of them. So I'm not a big Nike fan, although I won't judge those people who are, that you by what you feel. But they had a stranglehold on it for quite a while, and I like seeing it being spread around. So now Puma has been around longer than Nike. I don't know how many people know that, but Puma and Adidas have been around far longer.
When was Nike? Was it about 72? When did they come?
In the 60s is when the company formed. In the 60s, it became Nike, I think, in like 71 or 72.
Yeah, I think Landon has a hoodie or something it's a Nike hoodie, and it has like 72. Maybe.
Yeah.
I think that was its founding year or something.
That makes sense.
Yeah, I guess most people think it's much older than that. I would have thought that.
Yeah. Well, athletic shoes in general are not any older than that. I mean, you had very specific shoes they used for things like running, but they were basically leather shoes with spikes on the bottom or something.
And wasn't it, is my memory failing me or am I remembering, isn't it Puma and Adidas? They were brothers.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. So, formed by brothers.
Yeah. And they couldn't figure out how to coexist, so they just went their separate ways, and one created Adidas and one created Puma. So they've done pretty well for themselves.
I was going to say, that happened back around World War II.
Yeah.
And they're still both around. That's pretty impressive.
It is.
Yeah. All right. It's a time for Dean's Thoughts. That's a time when I share something I've written about the intersection between running and faith. We talk about how every run should have a goal. But how do you measure what you want to accomplish? And then how do you think about the success of that measurement? I think this answers some of those questions. It's called running by punctuation. Every run has a purpose. You've probably heard that before, but many people still do not approach their fitness in a purposeful way. I know people who go to the gym every day and do the same routine. I know a lot of people who go for a run 4 or 5 times a week, but run at the same pace and relatively the same distance nearly every time. But all runners and even walkers should have a planned outcome that is more than just finishing their session for that day. To be fair, sometimes you need to get stuck in one routine for a short time. For example, I ran a race that was brutal on my legs, and I've been doing nothing but easy runs since then. But even in that scenario, each of those runs has a purpose. I'm trying to slowly let my body recover, but also adapt to the training effect I received for running downhill. When you need to repeat the same goal for multiple days, it may not be that you're just going through the motions, but be careful. It would be easy for me, for example, to continue in recovery mode so long that I do not absorb the good things that come from what I did. So how do you assign your attentions to each run? Intentions to each run? What is your basis for your goals each day? And how do you measure the results of that day? I'd like to propose a system that I think answers those questions. Let's call it running by punctuation. Think about your most recent run. If you were to measure it in terms of punctuation, what would you call it? For example, was it a stepping stone workout where you would call it a comma? Maybe it was a workout where you pause to get it done, but then move on to the next workout. That would be a comma workout. Or maybe it was a workout that ended a training block. The next day, you'll start a new phase of training. That would be a period. Or maybe you had a tough track session that you really worked hard. That may be an exclamation point workout. How about a session where you're setting yourself up for another session? For example, I will sometimes run an extra couple of miles on a Friday because I want my legs to be a little more tired for Saturday's long run. What would that be? Well, I'd call it a colon workout. Running by punctuation gives a practical way to evaluate all your runs in the context of something you can picture in your mind. For the visual person, this may be a more connected way to find purpose in each run or walk. The idea of running by punctuation hit me when I heard a pastor ask the question about how we look at the resurrection of Jesus. Do you look at the death and resurrection as a period? Is it a final thing? Is the story over? If you're a Christian, you know it was not the end of things, but the beginning of a life lived for God. Is it a question mark? Do you still have questions? Or do you see the death and resurrection of Jesus as an exclamation point? Do you see it as a proclamation, a reason for joy and excitement? Ask yourself how you see it. For some people, it helps to have a picture to put things in context. If you're one of those, thinking about each run as one of many punctuation marks will put things into perspective for you. And we should all consider just how we look at Jesus' death and resurrection, because the way you consider that question could determine your eternal future.
That's a great story, Dean. It got me thinking about, you know, we always talk about a lot of people, they just go too hard too often. Mm-hmm. And this made me think about the person that sends you text and they do it in all caps and exclamation points. You get tired of that.
Yeah.
You're like,
that's true.
Quit doing that. And that's what your body does when you're always running exclamation runs.
That's a good point.
You did a great job here.
Well, I'm always looking for ways to kind of reframe the way I look at running, and running seems to be so boring and ordinary, but if you're creative, there's ways you can reframe the way you look at it to make it new and exciting.
And regularly. what makes for a good story? It's a mixture of all the punctuations. That makes for a good story. That makes for a good fitness, right?
Yeah, that's
true.
You
know, do a little bit of exclamation, a lot of none of them, some commas, some exclamation, that makes for a good story of our running life as well.
That is true. Well, which punctuation do you think would be used most often?
Comma?
That's what I would think. I would think most of your days running are just, this is a pause, a section where you just, and then you move on to the next thing tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think a comma would be most often. I think a period wouldn't be used very often. Maybe a period is, sometimes I think about this in the context of a period where you're moving in a direction, you had a goal, but you didn't hit that goal, and it looks like you're not going to hit that goal, and you need to reevaluate, kind of drop back and reevaluate and start on something new. That's a good period moment.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, we're very big on training blocks and periodization, so it's... periodization indicates that's where you put a period. You know, you've got a base block, or you've got a build block, or a strength block, or a speed block. And each one of those phases or blocks, that's where your period is. And then obviously exclamation points, those need to be used sparingly.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. How about question marks?
Like, what am I doing?
Yeah. I think about those times where I have a question mark workout where it's like
we used to call those character builders.
Yes. Yeah. Or no, I think about it from this point, you know, like you just have an anomaly. You have this workout where it happens. And
so you're talking about looking back on it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
What would be a question mark that you put in your plan?
Yeah, I don't know that. I think that's
maybe we caught maybe in the run or the upward running training plans. Those are the feel good runs.
Yeah, it could be.
It could be one of a few things depending on how you feel.
Yeah.
So yeah. Running by feel, it's the days you take the watch off. That's probably a question mark run. Maybe, I don't know.
That could be. Yeah. Yeah. A fartlek run is kind of a
sure.
Yeah. 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 That's interesting.
For most people, it's what does that word even mean is the question mark.
Absolutely. What about the question of Jesus and the resurrection? And I asked Perplexity, our good old AI friend.
That's what that was. I saw Perplexity. And I was like, what is he talking about?
Yeah,
it's your AI friend.
Yeah. Resurrection is punctuation. Exploring the metaphor is what this talks about. So it talks about a period. When you look at the resurrection and you think about it as a period, it symbolizes finality and closure. Using a period after Jesus has been raised suggests the story is over. There's nothing more to consider, and life moves on unchanged. Obviously, that's skepticism or indifference of the resurrection. The question mark is doubt. That makes sense. I think that one's somebody who's wrestling with whether or not they believe or not, I think, is a question mark. And then the comma suggests there's a continuation, a connection, an openness. A comma after Jesus has been raised means the story is not finished, and it invites us to connect the resurrection to our own lives and ongoing experiences, leaving room for hope and the possibility that God's work continues. The comma allows us to see our struggles and blessings as part of the larger narrative of redemption. And then an ellipsis. Implies uncertainty, and it's an ongoing story. There's anticipation, but you're not sure what the rest of that story is. Similar to a question mark, I guess. And the quotation marks indicates ambiguity or irony or distance. Back to what I was talking about, the running thing. Mm-hmm. It's what do I really? So people say that Jesus was resurrected. Mm-hmm. Quotation marks might be, oh, okay, right.
Right.
An asterisk denotes a caveat or special condition. An asterisk after the resurrection might mean yes, but, acknowledging belief with qualifications or personal exceptions. It reflects faith that is real, but complicated by life's pain or unanswered questions. And then, of course, finally, the exclamation point. It expresses excitement, certainty, and proclamation. An exclamation point after Jesus has been raised signifies joy, conviction, and the transformative power of the resurrection. It is the punctuation of celebration and hope, declaring the resurrection as the ultimate good news for a broken world.
Wow. I think I know why it's called Perplexity.
Yeah.
Because I am. I'm perplexed. Every time you read that stuff, I'm like, how did a computer come up with that?
Yeah. But,
yeah. She's a pretty smart gal.
It goes out there and figures all that out.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what are you doing? That's the question for you out there who's listening. What are you doing with the resurrection and the question of the resurrection?
And if you've got questions, you've got that question mark, go to upwardrunning.com/peacewithgod. We have a series of videos there that will walk you through and hopefully take that question mark and turn it into something else. It will really walk you through. It's Billy Graham, the voice that we all know, walking you through these videos. And they're really powerful. So go check that out. Again, it's upwardrunning.com/peacewithgod.
There is no better way to start the day than in the Word. Our Bible in a Year challenge is a great way to start the day in the Word as I read through the entire Bible in 365 episodes. I also share helpful tips each day along with encouraging quotes. Choose the self-paced challenge so that you can go at your pace. You must be an Upward Running member for access to this exciting challenge. So if you're not a member, sign up today and get started. If you are a member, it is just a click away to get started today. Every week I share a reason why running and or walking is so awesome. Well, I think it's one of the best ways to get in shape together with someone else. So let's say you and a friend decide you need to change direction and get some fitness in your life. What better way to do that than running or walking to do that? You could join a gym, but then you got the hassle of getting to the gym every day. You could try cycling, but that can be pretty expensive. And of course, you can't do that just anywhere. I just think it's the best activity to do because you can do it almost anywhere you want.
For the vast majority of people, you can walk out your front door.
Yep.
And do it.
And if walking doesn't feel like quite enough for you, you can start rucking. Add a little bit of weight to yourself. Yeah. You can catch up at the same time, you know, share ideas, you know, do whatever two friends do in a conversation.
Sure.
There's a lot of things that you can do at the same time, too. And it's a really efficient way to get in shape.
Yeah.
So it's a good thing. Good way for friends to get in shape together. Well, this past weekend was the Boston Marathon. My prediction fell 4 seconds short.
I saw that.
Did you see it?
I thought about it when I saw that, yeah.
I predicted that Connor Mance would be on the podium. And it came down to the guy that won was ahead, was a good ways ahead. And then he and two other guys were locked in a battle to the finish. And he finished 4 seconds behind the other two guys. So he finished fourth. But I was pretty close. He was only 4 seconds from second. So that's pretty impressive. He ran 2:05.08, which is
what won it?
2:04.44. So the guy that won it only won it by like 19 seconds.
I was going to say, when you say much further ahead, I think the average person is thinking 3 minutes ahead or something.
But, well, he was 2 minutes ahead at one point.
Oh, really? But at the finish, what, 20 seconds?
Yeah, those three guys battling together. And John Carrier, the guy that won, I think by that time he looked behind him a few times and was like, he was kind of easing up.
What's the course record for Boston?
2:03.02.
Okay.
And that was when they had that wicked tailwind when
So that is Ryan's time.
Yeah. Okay. Well, no, he didn't win that.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He didn't win that race.
Yeah,
but he got the American record that day.
He ran 2:04.58.
Or the unofficial American record. Yeah.
He ran the fastest for any American. Now, Connor was only 10 seconds off of Ryan Hall's time, and they had a headwind. But here's the question. Ryan Hall had the tailwind. Connor Mance had the shoes. Which one is a better performance? That's the question.
Imagine if Ryan Hall had the shoes and the tailwind.
I know,
what
right?
What happened?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's crazy to think. Because they say those shoes make minutes difference.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I don't know. It's an interesting thought. Which one now is more impressive?
Well, that's why I was kind of questioning your statistic. And I don't have the percentage in front of me, but those new Puma shoes, it was like 3-point-something% faster than the shoes that are out there today.
Mm-hmm.
What would 3.2% faster on the current marathon world record be? Not Kipchoge's sub 2, but if you took 3.2% off the current world record, would that not almost be below 2?
It would be. I think it would.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, the record's only 35 seconds off.
So that's what I'm saying. That's a pretty bold statement from Puma to make. Because to say that these shoes, by the numbers, are sub 2 hour.
That's true.
That's the marketing that they should. If that was Nike, that would be the marketing they're going
You're
with.
Probably right. Yeah. Well, John Carrier, the guy that won, pulled away from the pack in the 21st mile. Now,
if you know anything about the Boston Marathon course, you know that the 21st mile is an uphill mile. Mm-hmm. And he ran 4:40.
Wow.
For that mile.
That's insane.
Which John Kellogg, who is a coach and he's pretty good at looking at things and figuring out what's equal to it. And he says that's equal to about a 4:20 mile on a flat course in the 21st mile of a marathon. So, I mean, he just put it on those guys. Connor Mance even said, you know, I wanted to try to go with him, but it was too strong. There was just no way. So, but he hung in there. And then one of my favorite stories of this whole thing is Ryan Ford. I don't know. I think I'd heard Ryan Ford's name before, but I don't know much about Ryan Ford. He had a marathon best of 2:11 in the past. Well, apparently, like the day or two before the Boston Marathon, Puma went up to him and said, "Hey, we got these new shoes." And Ryan Ford was not sponsored by anybody, so he wasn't locked into wearing a particular pair of shoes. And they were like, "Hey, you want to wear these shoes?" And he was like, "Sure." So he wore these shoes. He ran 2:08 flat.
Wow.
And was 10th overall, 3 minutes off his regular time. So more evidence that the Puma shoes
are pretty special. 3 minutes off his PR at Boston.
Yes.
Which is not typically a PR course.
Exactly.
Wow.
Yeah. Isn't that incredible? And then on the women's side, the race was just spectacular. They had the three ladies that I think almost everybody had, probably being in the final three, were all locked in together. Helen O'Beary, who was the defending champion, and Sharon Locati, who they had battled a lot in the past. And typically Helen O'Beary would outkick Sharon, but Sharon in this case pulled away from her with about a mile left to go and broke her before they got to the finish line. So that was exciting to watch. The third lady was, I call her Y squared. I think that's what they call her on Let's Run. Yahula Yamsaloff. I can't remember how you say her name, but it's Y or initials. Yeah. So we call her Y squared. But she looked really good, but then it got too strong for her somewhere after 20 miles. Anyway, it was a fun race to watch. They set the course record by over 2 minutes. They ran 2:17:22 to win. And the winner was wearing Under Armour shoes.
Really?
Yes. I love it.
Yeah.
Kind of
like Mayab, what was it, how many years ago when he wore Skechers?
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah. This, and then two others I'd like to mention. Sarah Hall and Des Linden, both over 40 years old, ran 2:26, both of them, which is a great time at Boston. Would have won Boston not long ago.
Yeah.
And they both ran 2:26. And that was Des Linden's last professional marathon. She's retiring. Sarah Hall is 42 years old, still going pretty strong. Yeah. It's amazing how good she still is. That's pretty cool. But all of this made me wonder, when you look at Bill Rogers, Boston Billy, they called him, he ran 2:09:55 in 1975.
Without the shoes.
No super shoes.
Without the wind.
No scientific training. Stopping at water stops and stopping to tie his shoes in the middle of the race. Then you had Alberto Salazar and Dick Beardsley battling together, running 2:08 on that same course, which, you know, they call the duel in the sun in the early 80s. With Connor Mance running 2:05:08, which performance was better?
That's a tough one. I don't know.
I'm still inclined to think that Frank Shorter, Bill Rogers, Salazar, those guys are still... what they did was more impressive than what Mance is doing. Because they were actually at the top of the world at the time. They were seconds off the world record in most of those cases. Whereas Mance is still, even at 2:05:08, is still 4.5 minutes off the world record. So, I don't know. That just seemed more impressive to me, but I'm not throwing shade at Mance, by the way.
No.
I love to watch him run.
He's a good guy. It's a fun debate.
It is a fun debate.
Because you can see one day you can make the argument for the days of old, and then the next day you're like, oh, well, that was crazy good. So it's this way.
Yeah.
So I think that's the beauty of these debates is I don't think we're ever going to prove right or wrong on any of them.
Yeah, yeah. That today there's more competition than there was back then, too, I think. There are more people running. So maybe that makes it harder.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's an interesting thing. Well, our trivia question for this week, Bill Rogers, talking about his Boston Marathon win in 1975, Bill Rogers wore something very unique in his 1975 debut win of the Boston Marathon. What was it?
Fanny pack.
That would be great. This is almost... probably not quite as unlikely as a fanny pack, but it's pretty unlikely. It's pretty unlikely. If you know the answer to that, you can send that answer to dean@upward.org. And if you're the first member to send in the correct answer, you'll win $20 off in the store.
That would have been so great if that would have been the right answer.
That would have been, wouldn't it? Our motivational thought of the week comes from Lao Tzu. We've all probably heard this before, but it's such a good saying. A journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sometimes you just got to get started.
It's the hardest step to take.
That's right. Yeah. If you feel overwhelmed about trying to accomplish something, just take that first step and figure it out from there. Sometimes that's the best way to do it. You know, this week, the topic that I'm going to be talking about on Thursday night was something I've thought about a lot, but I've never really put it down on paper. But I committed myself to it, and that way I had to flesh it all out.
Yeah.
So sometimes just committing to it.
Yeah.
Taking that first step. We'll get you there.
For sure.
Yep. Nothing wrong with planning, that's for sure. But you can plan too much. I know that's blasphemy.
I don't know that, Dean. We could debate that one for a whole podcast.
Well, like and subscribe. Do all those things. Help us spread the word, because we want more people to hear about Jesus. And you've heard... a lot about Jesus in this episode. So share it with others. And until next week, may God bless every step of every run and or walk. Go out there and shine your light.
Good job, Dean.
For more information about Upward Running, visit upwardrunning.com. If you have questions about your salvation, click on the Peace with God tab. There is nothing more important. Thanks for joining us today.